Would you like some water?
I have some water.
Okay. Okay. If you would like water at any point, in addition to the water that you already have, you can have some. I also have coffee. I also bought new whiskey glasses, so I'm going to pour myself a Lagavulin 16 with an ice cube. But you shouldn't feel compelled to have any Lagavulin 16 with an ice cube. Also, I'm almost out, so maybe you shouldn't have it. Also, last podcast, you were a little quieter than me, so I want you to move this just a little closer to yourself than you normally would.
All right.
So I'm going to do... See, I got these glasses. A nice heavy bottom.
Ooh.
Yeah, I think this might be the last of the Lagavulin 16.
Was it so... You pressurize?
Yeah, I lost the cap.
Oh.
So I just decided to put that on it so it would be...
Interesting. I'm going to peer at your selection.
I'm kind of on the dregs of a lot of things. I need to do a restock. I still got some Blantons.
Can I take the last of your Blantons, even though I committed to
drinking? You want a nice piece?
I would like that.
I assume that he can hear me.
As with most of the characters, I yell at in my TV. So it's been a while since we did this.
Two weeks now? Yeah, we're in Las Vegas, and I think we both needed some time to recover.
Mm-hmm.
And we were planning on doing a podcast in Vegas, and I think we both forgot that when you're in Las Vegas and when you're at the Tableau conference, you usually don't sit down for like 4 days.
That's true.
And so... We could have planned it better, but I think it was good to have the time to kind of just focus on that stuff. Mm-hmm. Why don't we talk a little bit about what we did at the conference, Wilson? We'd had a pre-conference podcast, and mm-hmm. we don't need to spend a ton of time on it here, but I do think there were some interesting things.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think we outlined most of what the conference was kind of organized for. Little personal experience, I guess, that we can now add to it. Huge conference. Obviously, you and I both did some of the pre-conference events on Monday, running the Jedi training sessions. And then, of course, you had sessions, I think, throughout the week. And I didn't. I actually had just Tableau Doctor, which had its own fun that's there.
Yeah. I only had one session, but it was repeated.
Mm-hmm.
And my session was about Excel. And that's sort of, it's become a little bit of a tradition for Dustin Smith and myself to do that session together. And that was fun. And I got a little, did you see my viz that I made? My Jaden Smith viz?
No, not the final one.
Well, it's not that interesting. It's basically a crosstab. It was built to show like multi-conditional formats on the same sheet. But it was kind of, I caught him by surprise during the session, which was kind of funny. And then, yeah, I saw a bunch of sessions. And one of the things that I noticed, both preparing for the conference and at the conference, was that there were a lot of sessions about Tableau culture, right? Mm-hmm. So when Scott and I were doing our like prep and thinking about what to suggest, I actually went and looked through and I was like, oh, maybe there's a session on like how to build a culture around analytics, mm-hmm. because I've heard that from a couple of my customers and I just wanted to suggest some they could go to. And it turned out there was like 9 of them.
Mm.
And they're mostly by customers, mm-hmm. mostly by companies that had an effective Tableau implementation and wanted to talk about how they did it. And there was one that I went to by Aaron Stevens, an internal person who has worked really heavily to make it so The people within Tableau have access to data and resources to be able to do analytics themselves.
Mm-hmm.
But I just thought that was interesting that that's like seems like it's kind of a hot topic, and our marketing team obviously chose to accept all the sessions and feature them at the conference. So they clearly think it's a strategic thing to have people who are coming hear about that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something I'm hearing a lot from my customers. And Christian had this line in his keynote that I noticed that I thought it was interesting. He said, everyone needs to be a data person. And mm-hmm. I thought that was sort of an interesting line. And I don't know if it's particularly controversial today, but I thought that it was different from what I might have heard from him 5 years ago. When I was hired, I think he did this when you were hired too,
mm-hmm.
when we started at Tableau, when everyone starts at Tableau, they do something called boot camp, where they come and sit in Seattle for a couple of weeks and learn the ropes.
Mm-hmm.
And when the company was a little smaller, Christian would come in to all the boot camps and basically make everyone feel bad about themselves. Because he'd just come up to you and say, sell me Tableau.
Oh, that was your class.
He didn't do that to you?
No, we had like four people. He didn't care.
He came in and said, sell me Tableau. And I didn't really know what I was getting into at the time. I knew that I was going to be on the sales team, but I wasn't a direct salesperson. So I was like, why do I need to do this?
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of talked about stuff and he was like, oh, so you want to turn all my people into analysts? And I was like, I was thinking about it from the perspective of like, yeah, well, why wouldn't you want your people to be analysts?
Mm-hmm.
But the perspective that he had in that moment was customers don't want to hear that their people are going to be spending a bunch of time doing data analysis because they're not going to be spending time doing other stuff that they should be doing as part of their job.
Right.
And so, sorry, I'm just doing that real quick so we don't get beeps during the podcast. So I thought that was interesting that he was saying, this is sort of a counter sales point, is saying that the customer perception of all your people are going to be spending time looking at data all the time is actually a negative. And now he's saying everyone needs to be a data person. I don't think those are the same thing. Mm-hmm. I don't think he's changed his tune or anything like that, but I think it could be perceived that way. And I think my thought is that if he had said that in front of a large group of people 5 years ago or 10 years ago when Tableau was really new and unknown, it might have turned some people away, or he might have feared that there was some risk in saying that. And in saying it in his keynote, it was sort of a statement saying we're at the point now where people have to make this part of their lives, whether or not they're an analyst. So I kind of thought, to me, that sort of connected to the focus on culture and community, because that seems like the next frontier in analytics being a big part of enterprise companies.
Yeah, I think the big things that we typically hear about is really how do I build my Tableau deployment correctly? And part of that is cultural, which is, I think, one big piece we'll have to talk about. And then the other piece, of course, is more infrastructure, which we typically help out with a whole lot. I think what this kind of really leads us into is really talking about what that Tableau culture is. In the development of it, right? A big piece around it has always been this concept of agility, especially when we're thinking about building analytics or thinking about communicating information out. Having that agility ends up being important. And I think that's what most people are striving for at the end of the day, that they're really looking for a culture that will facilitate some of that agility that's there. But, just the simple fact that there's 9 different sessions with 9 different customers, really probably leading 9 different methods
mm-hmm.
of approaching this. It's a little bit of a daunting process, and it's one of the things that I think we need to dive directly into.
Yeah. The I bet there were some big differences in a lot of those different sessions, but I bet there were some commonalities too.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that they all referred to the sessions in some way around culture. Mm-hmm. You know, they could have said how we built a successful deployment, but they didn't. Right. They said how we built a culture of analytics.
Right.
I think just the fact that many of those sessions had them in the title, even though I didn't see them all, indicates that there was some commonality in the thinking. And you're right that the culture from a Tableau perspective is, I think, in our minds and in many people's minds, tied to agility.
Mm-hmm.
So let's define that a little bit. Tableau is agile, and we use the word internally, agile, to refer to some of our methodologies.
Mm-hmm.
And agile is also a word for development methodologies that is not related to Tableau at all. Mm-hmm. And it's also a term that... is in the Fallout video game series, which I'm going to be playing in about 8 days, and you're not. And and what does it mean? What it means to me is the ability to react quickly.
Mm-hmm.
We could look up a definition, but I think that's kind of the most basic definition of that word is not taking one approach, but allowing yourself to adapt and react mm-hmm. to the situation.
Right.
And in Tableau, that does sort of nicely tie to the skills that are necessary to use Tableau, because the application is built in a way for anyone to be able to use
mm-hmm.
and to be able to use their own kind of thoughts and ideas to explore
right.
information. It's very much related to the bicycle for the mind analogy that Steve Jobs. I just watched that movie, so I'm thinking about that.
Yeah.
But I get the same idea, right? It's not meant to give you a place to go, give you a thing you have to do. It's meant to give you a tool so that you can be smarter.
Mm.
It was what Steve Jobs believed about computers. What do you think about that? Sure. Anything to add to that definition before we...
No, I think that's fair, right? There's a couple of ways that we can define it, right? There's more of the technical agility of, the very fact that we can connect multiple different databases, allow for us to actually interswap between different data environments pretty quickly. But I think we go beyond that, right? The whole idea, and really what we're talking about, is the culture that's behind Tableau, which inherently... is not about that individual experience or not about the technology itself. It's about the collective and what they're capable of doing. And so thinking about sort of the agility as a culture or that data agility as sort of a culture there, I think it's really this whole spirit around how do we actually, as a group, can react quickly to things? How can we as a group be on top of new things that change within our system? As well as, of course, a group that is not going to be bound by the ways that we currently operate today and being able to expand and constantly innovate from that point. And I think that's the tough part, right? We are in a startup culture.
Yep.
And what I mean by that is, where we really do revere, I think, startups right now more so than anything else. And with that, we're really driving, I think, most organizations to that constant innovation state that's there, right? And so what is it that is unique? We've seen it with Tableau. We've seen it with how we do product development, but also, of course, with how we build analytics at different places. But what is it about Tableau that actually facilitates that? And, of course, what are some of the challenges that really will arise that will prevent some of those things from occurring? Because... well, that's really what I think most of those sessions were about, right? How do we facilitate and prevent the blockage of it?
So I noticed that you sort of draw a little bit of a distinction between collective agility
mm-hmm.
And maybe individual agility, which is kind of what I initially said was the definition. How do you think when a community is agile, how is that different from an individual being agile?
So there's a lot of things that we've seen, I mean, even internally, from how people have started to react to different things to how they work with the product and think about sort of this idea of pitching an idea that stands out from the pack, especially when we're a much larger organization that's there. Mm-hmm. So even thinking about sort of this idea of individual agility, I don't think a big piece behind that is, you know, if in a locked room, in a windowless cell, I think most folks, even with just Tableau, are going to be actually fairly agile with what they're capable of doing.
Now, interesting cell.
Windowless cell might be a hyperbole of, well, metaphor.
I don't know if it's any of those things, but it just kind of makes me laugh.
Imagery.
The idea that you're sitting in like an empty room with no food or water, but you've got a computer and you've got Tableau on it. I don't know. It's funny to me.
Didn't we put Scott in one of those offices a little further back?
Yeah, I think it might have been intentional.
But along those lines, one of the big things that I think about is what one person is capable of doing does not actually translate to what will actually help a organization drive that change in decisions, right? And the big thing that we find is even if knowledge surfaces from one individual, there's oftentimes, of course, barriers that prevent that information from getting to the right sources, from the right agents of change that's there. And a big piece behind it is really making sure that we fully realize Tableau, right? If we are going to spread Tableau across the board, that we facilitate a conversation, not just a majority.
Okay, so you're kind of referring to this collective agility with respect to Tableau as it's a tool set that you have at your disposal, and one of the things that allows an organization or community to be agile is, and I'm paraphrasing what you said, so tell me if I'm misunderstanding, but I think what you're saying is there's an element of crowdsourcing,
right?
So there's an element of people being able to pitch their own ideas and bring their own approaches to the table. And what Tableau allows you to do is try lots of different things and have this experience where you have all these different approaches and you get to kind of find the best one and find the best answers because everyone has questions and they can all ask them.
Right.
And the thing you want to avoid is limiting that tool set, not letting people use the tools that they have to be able to ask those questions.
Right. I mean, experimenting is definitely one part of it. And I think that's where the individual kind of fits into the picture, where it really does require an individual to think about all the different variations that their curiosity leads them to. Mm-hmm. But where I think the group really kind of comes into play is what ultimately gets accepted. And of course, their ability to react to new information that's there, which oftentimes ends up being a challenge, right? Whenever you get a group together, there's a bit of mob mentality that comes up. And of course, putting together even your smartest experts together in the same room, you're probably not going to get any better. They're not going to resolve that type of mentality any better than a group of folks who, you know, are less of an expert that's there. And so that's one of the challenges that come up. We develop a lot of experts, a lot of good scientists. How do we make them work together?
Yeah, I mean, that's interesting. I was thinking a couple different things. I mean, one is you bring up this idea of how do many experts work together, and I want to, maybe that's something we can bring back to Tableau Conference, because we're in this scenario where there's all these people and there's a ton of experts together, right? There's 10,000 people there, and at least a couple thousand of them are probably experts at some level in Tableau or in some sort of technology. And how do you manage that? You know, one of the reasons we have this conference is to build community. And is there such thing as too many experts? Mm-hmm. The other thing that so maybe we can talk about that. The other thing that I thought was sort of interesting, is this idea that we're giving someone a tool set. We're giving someone, to ham fist the analogy in there, the bicycle for the mind, right? And there's all these different approaches they can take and ways they can look at data. And I sometimes wonder, there's some like psychological studies that suggest that if you give someone too many choices, it actually makes them less productive. Mm-hmm. So how do we find a sweet spot in that? But that might actually be another podcast, because it's not really about this community and culture aspect. I do think that that issue of how do we get all these people to work together is really interesting, though. What are the issues that arise? I mean, did we learn anything from the conference, or have we learned anything in our history at Tableau on what happens when there's a bunch of experts in a room together?
Sure. I mean, I'll talk a little bit about my experience, at least at the conference it's there. So it's recent enough that I can remember it. But with the Tableau Doctor event that's there, one of the big things that you notice that's very different between, well, where we started off, I want to say 5 years ago, 5-6 years ago, back in Seattle, during my first conference, where it was a much smaller room, a couple of Tableau doctors that's there, versus, of course, something that was much bigger is the reliance on a system and a process that's there, right? And so this comes probably not to a surprise for anybody, but anytime, of course, you have more people in the same room together, you're relying on sort of agreed upon system to try to do the right thing. And a lot of times, of course, there's a balancing act that comes in from that.
What word would you use? I think this is going to come into our conversation here, so I just want to interject it. What word would you use as like the antonym of agility? Like, do you want to say rigidity? Maybe, or structure.
I want to say rigidity or structure, but maybe rigidity I guess the
structure isn't always bad, and we're kind of saying agility is the preferred way to go, and rigidity is maybe the not preferred way to go. And there's probably some places where structure is better, but I think continue what you're saying. What happens when you have many experts in a room and you're organizing something like Tableau Doctor is you need to put a system in place. Mm-hmm. And that system with rules and specific roles and specific jobs for everyone to do becomes specialized with a specific rigidness to it. So it ceases being agile. So I think that's kind of where you're going. I just wanted to kind of put a term in there. So I'm going to just write agility versus rigidity as sort of the shorthand version of that, so we can use that going forward.
No, I think that's really sort of the case that's there, right? And not to fault for anybody that's there. Organizing that amount of folks is always going to be a little bit difficult. But the biggest challenge, of course, is where you start to see that the rules that are set in place trump basically, I think, the spirit of what we really want Tableau Doctor to end up being, right? And so you find rigidity, I think, in making sure sessions were only 30 minutes, it's there. We find a bit of rigidity in finding a right expert to actually consult on the topic that's there. There's a lot of, I think, challenges that come up with finding basically the right source, as well as, of course, reacting to the situation correctly. And I think the big thing that we find is that the less tolerance that we have at making exceptions, which, you know, larger companies and more processes typically drive at, it ends up, of course, removing our flexibility to actually do the right thing.
Yeah. I think that's really important. I think the idea that who is the right person to answer this question and what is the right answer to this specific approach is something that happens a lot. And it makes sense that it happens. Like, before we do Tableau Doctor, we ask all our experts what they're good at. Mm-hmm. We're like, are you good at table calculations? Are you good at data blending? Are you good at writing SQL, right? And we point customers to them based on what we think the experts are good at.
Right.
And what happens when you do that is someone has a question, and before you even get a chance to answer the question, you're pigeonholed into a specific approach, because it's a question about table calculations. And then you don't get to have the agility, which is, I think, where a lot of our success comes from, which is, why don't you do it like this instead? This answers your question. It's way easier, right? That's one of the reasons Tableau is become adopted by a lot of people is we can say, you know, it's not about creating this picture or this text table or this specific calculation. It's about answering a question. It's about making your ability to get from having a question to having an answer faster. Mm-hmm. And it's not about a specific end result. So we can take any approach we want to get to that. And it doesn't even have to be a specific answer as long as we're more informed when we get there.
Right.
And so that goes away with that sort of specialization. Not that it's not important, but that I think we need, at least at this point, a greater density of people who are able to touch a lot of different things, a lot of different skills, rather than really have deep knowledge in one.
Right. No, and that comes up as what we saw with Tableau Doctor as well, right? You know, people come in thinking that they have specific challenges with one problem that's there, but in reality, if they've kind of already deviated off at an earlier step, we might have been able to actually simplify the complete approach in terms of what's there. And it's that agility of saying, okay, well, no, this isn't a table calc issue. This isn't an LOD question because of what you heard at this particular session that's here, or of course the road that's led you down to. But in reality, it's, well, if we think about data structure in a way, if we think about something completely different at a different stage that's there, we're able to actually answer the same question or even, of course, provide more information to the mix than sort of the route that we were originally going down to. So there are sort of that issue that comes up with growth, right? Sort of that specialization that comes into most jobs that's there, where folks get a little bit more focused, a little bit more and more focused that's there, and they end up being specialists. But in reality, of course, the whole concept of specialist might not play well with the whole idea of agility for how we think about things as well, right?
Yeah, I think it's going to sound like we're saying specialists are not good or something. I don't think that's what we're saying. I think we're saying it's too easy and too common to have a bunch of specialists and no one who understands the whole picture.
Mm-hmm.
And the risk with that is people get focused on just their area. They get protective of just their area. They make it so other people can't do their jobs because they have to come to them to get something done, even if it's simple.
Right.
They keep people not just from what the intention is of being safe and doing things right. Mm-hmm. They keep people from being able to get things done.
Right.
And so I think there needs to be a balance between specialization and I don't know what the antithesis of that is, but someone who is despecialized, someone who is wide but not deep, maybe. I don't know what the term for that is. We'll probably think of it after we're done. But I think what we see a lot in technology is that there's too many specialists, mm-hmm. and that's what causes inefficiency. I think that's really important. Are there bad things about that? Let me phrase that a different way. I think there are multiple levels to sort of probably technological expertise in general, but I'm thinking about it in terms of Tableau, mm-hmm. right? The 101 level is like, where are all the buttons, right? Like, what do I click on to do this? What do I click on to do this? The 201 level, which is still sort of a beginner thing, mm-hmm. is how should I answer this question, right? And I think that's what we're talking about right now. We're talking about the situation where I know I have a question and I know how I might typically do it. What's the right way for me to do it?
Right. And more importantly, how should I actually be conducting this particular job that's there, right? Yeah. And so it spans beyond just a particular project, but just the scope of how we think about our roles. And so a big piece around that, and something I really have treasured about basically my experience with Tableau, is that particular experience where people have been reacting specifically to what are the values associated to what they do, more so than reacting very specifically to a job description, a job role, or a process that kind of governs the role that's there. And it gets hard. I think anytime we get into a larger organization, how do we see ourselves fitting into the bigger picture becomes a little bit more clouded. I think it's the drive for us to just achieve very specialized goals ends up being something that is really driven by the whole losing my mind right now. Really driven by basically this whole concept of just role specialization and what we do, right?
So, and I think as a company, we've gotten pretty good at that 201 level of redirecting and framing things in a way that we're kind of targeting the right approach.
Right.
What I was trying to get to when I kind of started that, I think that's an important point. Where I'm going with this is, what are some problems with that?
Mm-hmm.
Can you think of any? I have one in mind.
With going with a 201 level that's there, I think the biggest thing...
Thinking about it from the perspective of a community,
right,
and in a culture.
Right. One, I think it's really just the collaboration, or even most situation, the lack of collaboration that comes up, right? We're focused with our own team. We're focused with patching fires. We get too busy to focus on bigger items that's there. I know, of course, during busy season for me, I need to look at my things that's there. Or I have a feeling that if my things go down, I'm really personally responsible for it. And it's something that's, you know, really worth kind of fighting through that's there. But
that's interesting, because what you're suggesting is that despecialization to some extent becomes a type of specialization, and that like having the skill of being able to frame Tableau questions in a way that's advantageous for us and more efficient actually becomes your specialization, and you lose the ability to focus on other things.
I don't want
to
say
I just think that's sort of an interesting paradigm, and I think that actually can happen.
But right. I don't want to call it a specific specialization for it, because I think, you know, it's getting confusing. Yeah. I think what it is that it is a value to it, mm-hmm. right? It's the difference between getting the job done versus doing the right thing, or, mm-hmm. you know, really getting the job done for it, right?
Yeah, and I think that's kind of where I was going with it, which is the right answer versus the suitable answer, and what does that mean to the community, right? So what you run the risk of doing when you have that approach of saying, you know, we don't think about it that way, we think about it this way instead, right. is you run the risk of alienating some people,
right?
Because you have a bunch of people and they're all saying, don't think about it that way, and right. then eventually the people that need to learn become mm-hmm. afraid to ask questions,
right?
Don't like being corrected, or go other places for questions where they can just get the bread and butter right answer to their question. How do right. I do this thing? Because they don't want to have to jump through this process.
Right. I mean, how many times, of course, even internally with our own customer solutions hotline, so for mm-hmm. folks who are don't know about this internal system, for all of our pre-sales and actually all of our customer solution folks, which includes pre-sales, post-sales, and tech support, there is basically just a small alias that allows for us to kind of collaborate.
Alias,
it's a big one now.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's kind of cool. If you have a question, you can right. ask anyone in the company who's technical.
But the likelihood, of course, of this, and I'm at a huge fault for it as well, is finding yourself being talked to from a soapbox that's there, right? Where people are specifically saying, okay, well, no, you shouldn't do things this way, and you've done things completely wrong, as opposed to actually approaching really the question at hand that's there. And there are some times where that's really the right answer.
Right.
And there are times, of course, where it's really completely not the suitable answer for it, right? So yeah. there are situations of breaking the rules in order to do the right thing further.
Yeah, I think what happens is we've got a big, and this is another thing with too many experts, I
right.
think, is we've got a big group of people, and many of them really know how to approach these questions, and they feel like other people need to hear it. So if someone has a question about doing something that isn't really a Tableau best practice, a lot of people will jump in and say the answer that they think the community needs to hear. Right. Not what will help the individual the most in their situation. Or maybe right. they think it will, but the individual might have already thought of that.
Right.
They might They might be thinking about it from a different perspective. The customer might have already thought of the thing. You know, there's all these kind of individual situations where we do need to break some of these rules, saying, you know, this is the way we would approach it as a company and find the best solution for our customer. And that's where I get situations like last week. I had someone on my team call me up and say she was afraid to send a question to the hotline because she didn't want to get shamed for it. I think that's a risk, you know. Yeah. And I think we need to find as a community a balance between how are we sharing best practices and also how are we just making sure people are technically informed as well.
Yeah, no, and I'm definitely at fault. I mean, Lord knows how many times I've actually made a soapbox about waterfall charts. And of course, you know, I don't think my answer is wrong in any sense, but I think there's definitely people who are tired of actually hearing my response. But at the same time, I don't know. I don't know who's actually heard it, who hasn't yep. heard it. And there's a lot of things that ultimately drive sort of both sentiments for all this, right? Part of it is you can both be coming with best of intention, but of course, it's really perceived in the wrong way. Not to say that we're bad at communicating.
Yeah, and that's an area where specialization actually has advantages.
Right.
Because if you can go to a small group, and that's kind of where things like our champions program and stuff, I think that's the theory behind it, is if you can go to a small group and with your question rather than 500 people, then you can have more of a conversation about it that isn't driven by what the entire community needs to hear. It's driven by your specific situation.
Yeah.
I think I was sort of jokingly saying this, but I think this is kind of – there's something to an approach like this. I was saying we need a safe word, right? We need the company needs to have a safe word saying if you've done all your homework and you already know the arguments against doing it this way, you need to go in and say watermelon or whatever, and that needs to skip you over the lecture. Just get me to it's like skipping the cutscene in a video game, right? I just going to the action, the part where I actually care, because I already know what happens in the middle. I've already seen this video, right? Mm-hmm. Obviously that's kind of a tongue in cheek idea, but I do think there are ways to do that in a community. And I wouldn't want to lose the ability to communicate with this whole technical organization. That's actually a really great thing. And the fact that people are nice on that, like this person was a little afraid. I think generally it's actually really civil and really great to have that forum. Finding balance between those things is really important. And that's that 301 level, is knowing when to pull out the best practice versus the just technically correct answer, or where there's something in between.
Yeah. And just to kind of bring everybody up to speed, if we, even though, of course, we should always adhere to best practices and do the right thing, in reality, of course, if we only had customers that would adopt only from a best practice standpoint, obviously we would be not really pushing the best practice moving forward, right? We need to adopt, we need to adapt. And part of course, this is really making sure we establish that environment that will allow for that type of conversation that's there.
I'm going to continue my analogy trend with two analogies. One is there's like a joke that's about how if I think it's from like the West Wing or something. I have a lot of Aaron Sorkin's analogies in my mind.
You've been watching. Watched the film.
If everyone who was for gun control joined the NRA, they could outvote the NRA and ban guns because the NRA is a Democratic organization.
Mm-hmm.
So. The best way to change a large, substantial group of people that you don't think about things correctly is from within. Mm-hmm. And that's, in my mind, that is the analogy for what you're saying, mm-hmm. which is if we only sold to people who agreed with us completely, we wouldn't sell very much software. If we want to have an impact on the world, we have to help them solve problems while they're slowly changing their worldview.
Right.
And then the other analogy is also from Aaron Sorkin, because we might as well just do that. All Aaron Sorkin analogies all the time. It's from the Steve Jobs movie. and I think about this a lot in the context of Tableau, which is, I think that was one of the first technologies to kind of circumvent the idea that the customer is always right mm-hmm. and say, we're going to tell you what you need.
Right.
And that's a really difficult place to be in when you create software for people. And it's a difficult place for us to be in as a company. And I think neither saying the customer is always right or saying the customer should do things the way that we say they should, mm-hmm. I don't think either of those perspectives is correct. You have to find the right balance for whatever use case you're working with.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what we're saying here.
Right. And so, I mean, I'm going to pull this all together and see if we can make some sense out of
everything. More analogies.
More Sorkin.
Just kidding. Go ahead.
You know, I think we talked about a lot so far. Just kind of wrapping this a little bit up before we refill our drinks. We talked about basically the need for us to really be much more prevalent, I think, overall, as a culture, as a product that's there, for us to actually make an impact. It really does kind of stem from this whole idea that we really do believe everybody should be involved in the process. But as we start to think about that, one of the big things that we find is the cultural issues that come in whenever we get a large group together. How do we actually make the most out of it? How do we make it efficient? And there are obviously a lot of things, even if in the best case scenario, where we develop entire teams, entire, of course, organizations full of experts that we actually start to run into, where we actually start to trap ourselves from thinking about what's good for the individual versus actually what's actually good for a larger collective. We talked about basically over-managing, sort of this idea of trying to manage basically the experts through a particular process that's there and restricting sort of a more collective thinking really in favor for really something that's easier to govern. As well as, of course, thinking about basically this idea of having it completely ungoverned, right? Having them kind of let loose on each other. And a lot of times you end up actually having less questions asked because there is perceived to be a right way of doing thing and a wrong way of doing thing. And people forget basically what ends up happening really in between, which is innovation, I think, that's there. So
I think that's a good transition to the question, what happens when a community tries to enforce agility, mm-hmm. right? Because we've been talking a lot about what it is, and we're talking about what it looks like. But what we've been saying so far is that it's a cultural value, right? Mm-hmm. This is what we've been describing is something that is an intrinsically held belief that a person or a community can have. And when we go back to the topic of these sessions at the mm-hmm. conference and what they were about culture, what we're trying to get to is, okay, how do you do that?
Right.
Like, well, what are the steps you take? How do you put in place a methodology? How do you put in place a set of rules that allow someone else to be successful at that? And what does that mean? And how does that affect people? So I think that's where we're going next. Let's take a short break.
Yeah.
Okay. Season 18, episode 38 is the next episode. They're still making new ones.
Jesus. Anyways.
So, yeah. We just can talk about video games the rest of the time. I think that's fine. We're out of whiskey.
Yep.
Not because we drank heavily, just because we were almost out to begin with. And then now we are out.
Mm-hmm.
I had a Lagavulin 16. Fitting that it is November, a.k.a. Movember, and the most famous drinker of Lagavulin 16 that I know of is Ron Swanson, who is one of the best mustachioed characters formerly on television. And Wilson had a bourbon called Blanton's, which is most famous for having a horse on the cap.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're done, and we're drinking water. And this water is delicious.
That's a good thing. I've had my fill at Vegas, so
That was 2 weeks ago, Wilson.
You know what? My body needs time to recover. It's getting old.
It's a little body. It takes a lot of time to get the percentage down.
Yeah. Is that how fractions work?
That is how math works. Because a little bit is a pretty big percentage.
Okay. Okay. So getting back to what we were talking about, that's there. We're talking about
mostly about Aaron Sorkin. So he had the Sports Night TV show, which was pretty good. It doesn't hold up that well now. And then there was The West Wing.
West Wing was really
West Wing was great. Then he did Studio 60 on the Sunset Strip, which was horrible. And then he did
Newsroom.
The Newsroom, which wasn't very good either. His movie career, on the other hand, you have A Few Good Men.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's pretty good. You have The American President.
Mm.
That's pretty good. That doesn't hold up that well now that The West Wing exists, because it's basically all the jokes from The West Wing, but kind of less polished, and in a shorter movie. And then he had... Well, he had Charlie Wilson's War, which I thought was really good.
That was really good.
And then, of course, he had The Social Network and Moneyball, two hits.
Moneyball was him.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know to what extent, because it didn't have quite the rhythm that is, you know, of, they might have changed it.
I didn't get the Sorkin speech.
Yeah, I didn't either. So I don't know to what extent he wrote it, or maybe it was collaborated with someone else, and then Steve Jobs is the new one, which I liked. And then I forgot about Malice, which I have never seen, but I learned about it when I was studying Tom Cruise, because not because Tom Cruise is in it, but because Nicole Kidman's in it. Okay. Wilson's going to the bathroom, and I'm going to talk about Malice. Malice is a tale about a happily married couple who would like to have children. Tracy teaches art. Andy's a college dean. Things are never the same after she's taken to the hospital and operated upon by Jed, a know-all doctor. I haven't seen that movie. It is classified as a crime mystery thriller by IMDb, and it also stars Alec Baldwin and Bill Pullman. So I think that's kind of interesting. He doesn't make a lot of movies, and I really like his movies. You know, I think his TV series are a little trite. But I find the movies, for some reason, a little bit more interesting, maybe because in a shorter form than a long episodic TV series, he's able to kind of make a specific point or explore a certain idea that maybe you can't do in hundreds of episodes of television, or if it's one of his later series, dozens of episodes, because they aren't very successful. They get canceled. But I interrupted Wilson to talk about Aaron Sorkin because I was trying to be funny. And really, what we were talking about was this concept of agility.
It lended a good bathroom break.
The language that Aaron Sorkin uses in his movies is kind of... artistically represents agility in language in a way that people don't actually speak, but is representative of agility in a way that I think people typically understand. It's fast, it's rhythmic, it's melodic in a way, it's poetic in a way. And I think that's something that people might refer to as agile, but in fact it is not really agile, because it's got a very specific structure to it. Right? And there's no improvisation in Aaron Sorkin's scripts. It doesn't allow people to adapt to situations or challenges. It requires them to stick very closely to a set of lines. And so while you may think that this is just an elaborate monologue by me to give Wilson the time to go to the bathroom, it actually is a very clear metaphor and analogy for our topic. And clearly should be focused upon as the most important part of this episode of our podcast.
Yeah. I'm not sure about that delivery. But anyways, getting back to the topic, because now I am back in my seat. We were talking about agility. We were talking about basically this idea of, well, thinking about actually how do we actually promote agility and collective agility, and some of the challenges around that that's there, right? So
yeah, where we left off was we kind of have defined agility as a cultural value.
Yeah.
And I think that's the important part for our next section here, because it is a belief, especially when it comes to a community. It is a belief, but it's not a belief that is enforced. I think that's kind of what a cultural value is, something that people kind of intrinsically hold as important rather than something that is a rule.
Mm-hmm.
And the challenge with that comes from, again, to tie back to the conference and all these sessions about the culture of data analysis. How do you put that in place? How do you actually create something like that?
Right. I think a lot of folks ultimately kind of look to it where hopefully that it's like baking cookies, right? There's a recipe, you follow the recipe, and outcomes cookies that's there.
Mm-hmm.
I think reality is it's a little bit more complex than cookies. That there's always this idea of you can't put the same model and hope to develop exactly the same thing, because you are working with different requirements, you're working with different people, you're working with a completely different business scenario for the most part. And what you ultimately have to rely on is really what your end goal really is, right? If we're trying to promote that people are going to do the right thing, it's got to start with people doing the right thing. And it sounds a little bit fluff right now, I think. But in reality, I think we have to kind of really reinforce that, right?
It sounds idealistic, right? Because I think most businesses would argue that there have to be safeguards and rules in place for how people do anything. Because even if you trust everyone you hire,
mm-hmm.
and even if you work very hard and believe that they have a cultural understanding that aligns with your own, there's still risk in that. There's still motivations that you don't know. People are still individuals with secret motivations and with capabilities to make mistakes.
Right.
And how do you safeguard against that? How do you enforce this social contract with your organization to have a cultural value?
Yeah. No, I think it's tough. I one point I'll correct there is I don't think it's necessarily secret agendas or private things that's there. It's just different priorities, right? People have different focuses. Sometimes, of course, it's motivated by one thing versus another, and we have to kind of work those things out. The big thing I think that comes into it is really from an organization standpoint, really making sure that we invest in collaboration, as well as, of course, just a cross-pollination of duties and roles that come in from there. I think one of the things that has always been kind of important looking at, different models for how people structure project teams and things like that, is I think Google was one that actually rotates their project teams pretty regularly.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole goal behind that is not only, of course, to kind of generate more creativity amongst groups, but also, of course, to really build a stronger network, I think, of users that aren't focused in one area, right? That they have a full understanding of how to actually what it takes to run other portions of the business and some of the considerations around that. Because without it, we really are, well, it's way too easy to silo each job out and to focus and specialize really into that area alone. We end up, of course, just being able to focus in our own area and we get really good at it. But what that also oftentimes leads to is inaction, because, well, the best way of controlling your environment is to, of course, prevent the environment from changing around you, right?
Right. Yeah. You bring up the topic of cross-functional groups or cross-pollination, giving people lots of different opportunities and different skills. Part of that, I think the reason they do it at Google is probably to keep people happy. One of the things that keeps people stimulated is not doing the same thing over and over. Mm-hmm. But it also allows them to develop multiple areas of expertise with the idea of not getting anyone siloed into kind of one avenue, right? And that's one approach for making sure that people have the values of an organization. When you see the whole field from the perspective of a community,
right,
you sometimes naturally develop the tendencies and beliefs of that community. Within Tableau, one of the things that I've noticed that we've done a lot lately has been to put a lot of emphasis on the basics of not only what Tableau does, mm-hmm, but why we do it the way we do, right? With, you know, we talked about, I think we have a published episode about certification. We may not have actually published it, but mm-hmm, we've talked about certification before, this idea that we have a requirement of technical proficiency for everyone. We have boot camp where we put people in our office. You know, we put people in our office for an extended period of time when they're new. Mm-hmm. We have social and cultural events that are not around work. And all of those are built to provide culture, to teach people culture in a way that isn't giving them a set of rules to follow, but giving them a set of values.
Right.
That's probably going to be different amounts of effective for people,
right,
depending on what their own personal values are and priorities are, like, right, you said. But that's how we do it. And I think both of those approaches, the Google approach and our approach, are both things that can be done in tandem. Yeah. We could probably do better at Tableau in giving people visibility into different groups. We could probably have pre-sales people sit in dev more often to see the prioritization processes,
different pre-sales
features.
Groups. Yeah.
We could probably have sales people sit in marketing or with project management or with pre-sales people sometimes, yeah, to see what they think about. Because I think those things very kind of succinctly tie into the values of the business.
Right.
What are some other things that a company can do, or that you've seen us do or others do, to kind of try to put those values in place?
I think it's really beyond just establishing the right connections, putting the right faces behind the names that's there, which I think Tableau does a pretty good job around that. We each year invest in actually bringing everybody back to a global kickoff where everybody in the company is sitting in one place and actually able to, mm-hmm, converse and work with each other for a couple of days. And of course, even other events that kind of span beyond that. The other idea behind it is really just kind of encouraging, I think, the collaboration across different teams and different functions, mm-hmm, that's there. I mean, people have different focus, different priorities that's there. That's what allows for the right set of controls as well as the right level of innovation to really occur, right? So where you're not just so single-tracked and then focused on, for example, providing analytics to people, that we forget to govern data and manage it in a way that actually is sustainable or, of course, protects the integrity of the data itself. We need folks to focus in different areas in order to do that. And part of that is that collaboration that does occur across those different teams and the right checks and measures for that conversation to exist. Now, the big challenge, I think, with that, right, is really having that be done in a way where people are not suspicious of each other. And I think that comes into, I think, what we talked about earlier, even with our hotline. Everybody does have a positive motive for it, but sometimes, of course, things are done heavy-handedly. Things are, of course, we're not sure about why the question's even coming up.
And when that response comes in, when the response around don't think about it this way, do it this other way comes in, it's very interesting because the intention behind those moments, uh-huh, is teaching someone to be agile, but the way they're teaching someone to be agile is by giving them a rule to follow.
Right.
And that's kind of the opposite of what actually creates a value. Values, I think, when a community has a set of values, rules emerge from that.
Right.
But you can't go the opposite way. You can't say, you're going to follow all these rules and the values are going to appear.
Right.
And so that I think that's just something to guard against in a culture where you're trying to build a value around analytics.
And you know, in my mind, it's not just about having the right individuals. Obviously, of course, if everybody was respectful and understood sort of the contract, I think, of doing the right thing, and we can actually kind of assume that with most folks that we're working with, we get across, I think, a lot of issues that come across. But there are roles, I think, that come in to kind of resolve those issues that are sometimes unresolvable. And this is, of course, where I think we're... you know, management's always, I think, typically looking for ways of encouraging and institutionalizing, I think, this idea of agility. I think agility really kind of comes in actually the other way. It's being able to react in those instances and to actually fix those issues that come up. So a bit less preventative, and we just have to be a little bit more on the go.
Well, one of the things I think we've done a really good job at within Tableau is allow people to work on projects that matter to them. The fact that, like, immediately after we put this podcast online, marketing sent out an email to the entire company saying, hey, everyone should listen to this. The fact that when we we'll probably do an episode at some point about our VizWiz competition, the fact that when we went to our management and said, we want to do this competition, people were like, okay. You know, the flaw in that is, like, do we actually have the resources to do it? Which is, maybe we do, maybe we don't. But I don't think I've ever been prevented from doing something that I care about. I think management has done a pretty good job of looking at and saying, okay, this is what you want to do. Let's see if we can find a way to fit it into our strategy.
Right.
Within dev, there's actually a significant number of features of our product that were built as part of the hackathon. Uh-huh. That were, like, someone... within dev was like, my side project is going to be build this thing because I think it'll be cool. And then they show it to people and people say, wow, that's great. Let's actually build it into the product. Hmm. So there are more things that you can do. Like, what we could do internally is, I think we could be a little more proactive about it from a management level and tell people they can work on projects and give them time to do it. But the reason I bring that up, outside of what you said, which is, you know, allow people to kind of work on things that they value and are important to them,
right,
is within an analytics culture, if you're trying to build this culture of analytics, one of the ways to do it and make it work and make people care about it is to allow them to work on analytic products that they care about. Employees at companies have questions and things that they are really passionate about. And giving them the tools to ask those questions and find answers and make proposals to their leadership and embark on projects around making those things better increases that passion and it builds those values. And if you're hiring people that you trust, you know, not every single idea is going to be a winner, but a lot of them will be. And you have to give people the ability to explore those ideas. Right. So where that ties to analytics is, how do you empower those people to ask those questions without putting yourself at risk, without putting the company at risk, without sacrificing security, without also putting too many rules in place?
Right. And I guess along those lines, you know, can't ditch, you know, your day job in order to kind of pursue basically what's there. But having freedom, I think that once you are able to complete your day job, your day-to-day responsibilities to pursue other things does end up really kind of reinforcing the collective's understanding of what's really going on and what the collective really kind of feels, well, as a group that's there, right?
Well, there's a growing, I think, attitude within employment in general that it's not important that you spend 40 hours a week doing your job, doing what we hired you to do. Or it's important that we give you some responsibilities and you complete the responsibilities. And we've right. It's our responsibility to make sure those responsibilities measure up to what we're paying you. But it doesn't matter if you spend 30 hours or 40 hours or 70 hours or 25 hours on that. The point is that you do your job, right? And then you also have the avenue to do other things that you think helps the company. So I think that ties into this very closely.
There's also sort of one more idea that kind of came to mind, and we kind of mentioned it a little earlier, but it's also this idea that we have to kind of get away from, which is that there is always a correct answer to things. And my belief around that is, I've always been a proponent of what's the correct way of doing things or bad ways of doing it. But in reality, I think when we kind of bucket these things out, it's a simple way to learn, but it's actually a really bad thing for how organizations should actually run themselves, right? Without fully understanding sort of the breadth of options that are available, you're always going to do things wrong. I think that's there. Without actually measuring and adapting yourselves to each situation that's there, you're not going to be much better. And you're not actually doing yourself a service with actually just answering things in a particular predefined fashion that's there, right? And so the big thing I think that it goes along with sort of this idea of pursuing your own projects is to understand that there's no correct and wrong answer, but there are better answers and that there's a pursuit around that.
Yeah, I think... That's true. I think the thing that can be challenging with that is the idea that if there's not an answer, or if there's not a correct answer, the attitude that maybe the project isn't worth pursuing. I think that can be a flaw in allowing people to or disallowing people to kind of approach whatever projects they're interested in. Because from our perspective, I think we'd say you learn, even when there is a correct answer, you probably learn a lot more from the journey and the process of discovering the answer than you learn from what the actual answer is.
Right. It goes back to some of the things that we have kind of valued about the agility of Tableau, right? It's that experimentation that comes up, right? If we don't experiment because there's going to be things that are not going to be conclusive, then we will never find the things that are going to be conclusive. And so I think it kind of all ties back in, whether we're running the organization, whether we're actually thinking about the analytics that we're doing in our approaches, it all kind of stems off of this whole idea. That's part of it is there's better ways of approaching things, and your exploration of that is really the end goal.
Yep. Going back to the idea of empowering people to embark on their own analytics projects, we've been kind of talking for over an hour now about why we shouldn't put rules in place. But I think this is an area where there actually are some very loose rules where we can say, here's what we've done internally, or here's what we've been seen be successful in how to empower those people. These aren't rules for the people. These aren't rules for the people that are looking at data, but these are rules for how to empower those people in a safe way. Right. For the people that actually, their job is to give employees a tool to do their job better.
Right.
And some of the things I heard at the conference were provide data sources that are broad and allow them to ask a multitude of questions, but don't assume that every question can be contained in the data source. Right. So can you simultaneously do that? I think that might be the most important thing when you're talking about analytics. Allow analytics to be flexible from two perspectives. One, allow lots of questions to be asked, but also from the perspective of allow for the possibility that you haven't thought of every question prior to beginning the project. And within Tableau, how we do that is we build subject-oriented data marts in Tableau Data Server, right, that are based around opportunities or accounts or bugs or whatever, and we allow people to explore those, but then we don't assume that that's going to catch every question someone's going to have, and we give them the freedom to bring in their own data or connect to our larger data warehouses when they need to. Not a lot of people leverage those capabilities because they might not want to, they might find it too cumbersome, they might not have the technical expertise to, but they have the freedom to. And that's one of the ways that we empower our people to do that. So I think that actually it's sort of a role. It's more, but it's, again, like you said, it's more of a value. You know, it's more of saying we give people the ability to look at data, and our governance is more about how to make it easy for them than it is about how to restrict their capabilities.
Right.
The intention behind these things, where we're coming from with this is, you know, how do we empower a community to grow, right? When a community has a strong set of values, rules come from that. When rules precede growth, then you typically either don't see growth or you see growth in different values. What was I going to say? Oh, okay, yeah. So we talked a little about the concept of agility earlier, and that's been sort of our governing term, and we've defined it as this cultural value, and we've said what, you know, some of the examples of things that we've done at Tableau, and I think some of the kind of practical things people can take out of this are some of the approaches that we've seen be successful for providing data, some of the ways that companies cross-pollinate and allow people to try different things and get visibility into different groups, and the focus that a company has on letting those values just be part of people's lives, not necessarily force them to abide by certain rules, but allow them to see and experience values. A lot of the times that is enough of an influence for someone. The antithesis of that, the kind of rigidity element of it, is kind of interesting, because I think what we see with customers sometimes is this paradox that occurs. It occurs when a company does go to one of those sessions or listen to someone like me who maybe lays out a set of rules and says, these are the things that would really help you put in place a culture of analytics, and they go put it in place as a set of rules, as a process, as a methodology. Not that that's wrong, but the risk with that is by making it a methodology, it is no longer agile, right? Making it a set of rules, making it into something that must be followed, takes away the flexibility, even though the values behind the rules are correct.
Right. Yeah, no, I would go one step further and actually call it out to being wrong, right? You can't mandate flexibility. I really believe that there is sort of that concept that's there where we're trying to actually make the most out of Tableau. It's not, of course, of replicating what other people have done that's there. There have been very successful models, and it's worthwhile to actually use that as a branching off step that's there. But really, of course, with that, it's really not thinking that in the same way that, you know, we've talked about, you can't really mandate creativity in a group. What you're trying to do is support those ideals or sort of those characteristics from with developing that's there. So the agility that we have, the creativity that we have. And with that, it's really, of course, making sure that we're not necessarily putting rules in hope to enable it, but really providing the right level of support behind doing so. I know those two things right now sound really alike. But in reality, of course, the big thing that's different there is, of course, what happens if I need to move past it? What happens if I need to pursue it, right? That's the difference between that support.
And we talked about this this struggle between the right way to do something versus the suitable way of doing something. Mm-hmm. And I think that ties in here because strictly sticking to a best practices answer at all times is providing rigidity that keeps it from being a best practices answer.
Right.
The idea that there's a formula behind an approach to questions is wrong outside of the agreement that every question is really different and requires its own kind of unique perspective.
Right.
And often one answer might be right or one approach might be right, but requiring people to think about things a certain way creates wrongness. So I think that's what happens when someone tries to put in place a methodology that is based on a recipe, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I find the problem is with the methodology called Agile, which is a development methodology, right? It's a set of steps on how to be Agile when you're developing. Right. And if you have to follow a set of steps, then you don't get to break the rules when you need to, when the situation calls for it. So I think the other kind of piece of this, Wilson, is kind of what people are needed in this paradigm. And I think there actually is kind of a unique set of groups. And we've talked about this in a previous podcast, but I think it's worth touching on here just for a moment. Obviously, there are technical experts needed. There are specialists needed in this approach. And as we said before, the specialist isn't something we should eliminate, but the balance between specialists and generalists, that's the word. We found it. Balance. Generalists. The balance between specialists and generalists needs to be there. And practically how that works, sorry, I typed in something on my computer wrong. Practically how that works within an organization is there will naturally be people who understand the data better than others, and they need to be part of an analytics paradigm, like we said, to provide the right information to people who need help with it. There also need to be people who understand the questions that need to be asked.
Right.
And they can't, it can't be this sort of game of telephone that often happens with IT projects where the business creates a set of requirements for the technical people and then they interpret the requirements and they build something and they give it back to the business. It has to be a conversation.
Right.
Otherwise, there's inefficiencies and it'll inevitably have
right.
flaws. But there's another role in there that you were talking to me about earlier that I want you to kind of describe, because I think that's
sure.
something that people don't typically think of, but it's central to this whole process.
Right. And I think it's really kind of that the folks that bridge the gap there, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, in thinking about basically what we talked about earlier, I guess I have to, the more I think about it, the more I refine it, I guess. At this point, one of the big things that I really do believe is that it's not really these individualized roles that people fit into, that you can put into a neat, clean job description. It's always a spectrum that comes up. Even, of course, as people develop, it's going to be a spectrum of people who are going to be very focused on one area of the technology. In our situation, it might be the data management of it. And then other folks that are focused a little bit much more on the business management side of it as well. And of course, that bridging of the gap that's there has always been the sweet spot for how Tableau works. It's really thinking about both data as well as the business to really making sure that, well, the data doesn't get unused, as well as, of course, that we make valuable decisions off of data itself, right?
I kind of like to think about it as a line. There's two ends to the line,
mm-hmm.
and one end is data, and one end is more strategic business
right.
decision making. And there's not going to be any person whose skills range the entire width of the line.
Right.
There will be some people whose skills range most of the business side, and some people whose skills range most of the data side, and there will be overlap.
Right.
And I think a lot of the times the Tableau expert gets pigeonholed into more of the data side. But in fact, I think what we envision is that person probably isn't all the way on the left and not all the way on the right, but they encompass most of the middle, right? Mm-hmm. They probably start 10% over from the most data oriented, and they probably start 10% over from the most business side, and they occupy that whole central spectrum. Right. Would you agree with that?
Yeah. And I think as we develop as well, it's rare that we go outwards to the ends of the spectrum that's there. What I think works well is when we actually are able to encourage going the other way that's there, right? And what I mean by all that is you're going to get better with the product regardless. The more we use it, we know that's the case. And folks oftentimes kind of fret about basically those things that come up. Biggest thing that we do find is that you're going to be more useful when you're able to actually cross that specialization concept that's there, mm-hmm. when you're able to bridge out further. It's really about kind of working along the spectrums, tackle the things you don't do well. And I think with that, you're going to actually encourage a lot more collaboration and culture from that, rather than actually pursuing the thing that typically ends up being a little bit easier, which is focusing and being more better and better at the things that you currently work on, right?
Yeah, and the reason that I think we refer to that set of skills as bridging the gap is because traditionally there is a gap. There is a gap. If you think of this as a spectrum or a line, there's no overlap between the data side and the business side. At best, they butt up against each other, and at worst, there actually is a physical gap between the capabilities there. And so there needs to be a person who bridges the gap and has expertise in both of those realms, mm-hmm. and only through that overlap can productivity really be achieved, because that's where things like language that makes sense to both parties happen. Philosophically speaking, language and culture overlap a great deal. Mm-hmm. And I think that's true to businesses as well. Language and culture stem from one another. Right. You had brought up something earlier that I don't know if it's relevant here or not, but it might be a good thing to close with, which is kind of a word from one of the people that we work with about, yeah. Do you think that's a good kind of way to sort of tie this together?
Yeah, I think it's a good reminder of what the ideal is, because I think we talked a lot about sort of what is useful and what isn't, but at the end of the day, what are we here to do, right? And for most folks who are out there deploying Tableau, I think this actually still resonates. And Christian had this to say specifically about basically the launch of our Visible product that's there. And it's really about making our tools be impactful. So you kind of describe it this way. The launch is also a positive step forward in transforming people from consumers into makers. For the past 20 years, nearly every technology has evolved from static and mass-produced to interactive and participatory and personal. That includes TV, music, education, publishing, healthcare. Now even, of course, electronic hardware and 3D printing. As such, technology is becoming more meaningful and more capable of bringing out the best in us. And so I believe that that concept is really what we're after. We want this to be a participatory experience for a lot of folks. And we're out here to try to make sure that our deployments are impactful for one another. So as we start to think about all of this that's there, start from that that end goal and work backwards. I think that's the best way for us to kind of at least cap off in terms of all the advice that we provided.
Yeah. Also, a good place to start is with Aaron Sorkin.
Oh.
So I think a good place to start with Aaron Sorkin is A Few Good Men, which is a movie about basically.